Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for December 5th, 2013. And now that the comet Ison has passed the sun and all of the astronomers out there have gotten egg completely all over their face, the most they can say is, gee, they don't know, they're not going to make any more predictions, or comets are unpredictable. Well, if you don't know what a comet is, it's pretty hard to predict anything. And so it's such a bizarre situation that we have here, where professional astronomers are really, you know, they're totally incorrect about the concept of a comet, what are the basis of a comet. So, of course, they can't predict. Last week I talked about the shrinking of the comet Coma as it approached the sun. I talked about the wings of the comet. And, you know, these are plasma characteristics of a comet. Every time the comet grew, a sunward spike or symmetrical wings or brightened, it was like, oh, something hit it. It must have divided, therefore opened up a new vein of ice. And at every step of the way, they said, oh, it must be breaking up. It's going to go away. And even as it rounded the sun, the European Space Agency and other people were saying, well, that's the end of Comet Ison. It broke up. It's not there anymore. And lo and behold, out the other side, it comes developing a comet tail and whisking off into along its orbit. So, you know, anyway, the situation is just very bizarre, where you have people in professional situations who clearly have no clue what they're doing. Then you have, well, the real situation is you have Tier 3 wannabe NASA Trekkies that are out there drumming the party line. They don't know anything. They're textbook repeaters. That's the best they can do. And this is what is pawned off on the public. But I want to talk specifically about the real issue here, is that NASA is hunkered down, not saying a word. None of these people that you see in the news or that are quoted in the articles that you see in the general news media, none of these people are directly working for NASA when it comes to the capacity of comet commentary. For example, Carl Battams, it's pronounced, of the Naval Observatory, you look at the bottom of his sun-grazing webpage, put on the Naval Observatory website, it says he's not associated with NASA. You look at other websites of the Tier 3 outreach people, every one of them has a disclaimer saying they're not associated with NASA. You look at the CIOC, the Comet Ison Observing Program webpage, who's paying for this? I mean, these guys are sitting in government-paid offices, getting government data, and making commentary, and then at the very bottom they say, but they're just doing this out of interest. They're not related to NASA. So NASA has got its outreach people out there in front doing the dirty work for it, and they're sitting back there, and all the big honchos, the Tier 2 scientists, you know, like the Hal Weavers and the, you know, the Don Yeomans out there, who are supposed to be the big comet honchos, are nowhere to be found. And over 60 instruments looking at this comet, not a shred of that data made it to the public, certainly no photos. And the SOHO, I want to make a specific comment about SOHO. These are the cameras on the SOHO satellite, the Solar Observatory satellite that's between Earth and the Sun. We've been getting data from this satellite for over 10 years. Well over. It goes back into the mid-90s. That satellite has been functioning. But the actual resolution of the cameras, the C2 and C3 cameras, the narrow field and the wide field view cameras from SOHO, have extremely high levels of resolution. And all of that data is missing used to be available on the web page, and now they just have these little very bad quality pictures. And the same with the stereo photos, giant pixels. I don't even know where you could get such giant pixels. They must have a giant pixel store that they buy these pixels from, because they're you know, you're talking about a couple hundred pixels on a photograph. And this is not what the original data that comes off of these satellites should look like. I've seen the original data, and it's very high resolution, where they get right down to the square inch on the surface of the sun, looking at solar flares and solar conditions. And what they're passing off to the public is not worthy of a third grade science project. Just incredible. So, okay, I'm not going to dwell on that. I just wanted to review where we were with Comet Ison. But basically, Comet Ison was one very normal plasma discharge comet. That's all I can say about it. It did everything that a plasma discharge comet should do. The head shrinking as it went into the sun, the very close to the solar atmosphere, the creating the comet tail after it came out, and the creating the plasma wings. I had a posting on my webpage showing the pictures, my original drawings that I did, showing the combined electric fields of the sun and comet nucleus, and how it creates the wings of the comet. I talked about that last week on my show. So Comet Ison was a perfect example of a standard plasma discharge comet. Its orbit changed. Its orbital period was reduced from about infinity down to 400,000 years. It may be a little less than that by now, and it certainly will be reduced as Comet Ison moves out, and we may get some interesting observing here as the next weeks unfold, as Comet Ison becomes visible in the evening sky as it moves up towards our North Pole sometime in December. But anyway, Comet Ison in review, a very normal, very standard plasma discharge comet. Nothing unusual about it if you understand what a comet really is. Okay, so anyway, this week I'm going to concentrate on a couple more aspects of comets and branch out. I want to talk a little bit about archaeology. But let me just review something. Finally, this past week, I think it was Sunday, I was able to have posted on the webpage the book packages, and this is something that's way overdue. The books right now, I have 8 books. I'll just quickly list them: Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, the Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet, Atlantis to Desla, the Colburn Connection, then the Weather book, Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun Earth Weather, then the Calculate Primes book, then the Diamond Principle book, then the two latest books that are only in ebook form, the Comets book, and then the last one, last release, Water. And then I've got a whole series of DVDs and CDs. I'm not going to list these individually. But what's been missing is the ability to buy these as packages, so that you don't have to buy them one at a time or whatever. So that's listed on the webpage. I'm not going to say any more about that. You can go there, and this is a good time to introduce this also, as it's right before the holidays. Anyway, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and check that out. You can buy the books by themselves, all the books, so you can buy them either in print form or ebook form. You can buy just the DVD, CD packages with all of the CDs and DVDs, or you can buy a combination, and you can have either print books or ebooks in your combination. So all of those packages are there. So enough of that. One aspect of Comet Ison that did not really make the news is that it developed a sodium tail. And also last week I forgot to mention in the show something that's very characteristic of comets as they approach the sun. and that is they develop iron in their spectral and in the spectral analysis of the chemicals in their tail. They develop the heavy elements, iron, and other heavy elements. This is because these elements are in orbit around the sun, and we see this, for example, in the zodiacal light. Now, it's like a Saturnian ring that surrounds the sun, excuse me, in its equatorial plane, and on a certain twice a year we get to see the zodiacal light. Some people call it zodiacal, and that's a matter of semantics, but basically, it's a Saturnian-type ring of material that orbits the sun, and here's what happens. The heavier elements are more resistant to the solar wind, and the lighter elements, the hydrogen compounds, the nitrogen compounds, etc., basically get cleared out by the solar wind, and so they exist in pockets out until almost the orbit of Pluto, in which they form a giant donut nebula. But the bottom line is that the heavy elements can remain around the sun and resist, so to speak, the solar wind. And so they can stay in orbit, and they're in a somewhat of a protective belt there. And so anyway, when the comet comes in, it's attracting the material in the tail. It is attracting the heavy elements. So these start to show up in the spectrum, the chemical analysis of the tail material in comets. When Comet Ison started to approach the sun a couple days before its close passage to the sun, it developed also a sodium tail. Sodium showed up, and these show up a little bit offset, because the elements are heavier and the charge to mass ratio, that is the amount of charge for the amount of matter in the molecule or in the atom, it is lower. And so these move slower in the electric field, so they come in on a little bit different path, orbital path coming into, this is an electrical orbital path, mind you, coming into the comet nucleus. And so therefore, Comet Ison developed a sodium tail, and also certainly developed a heavy metal tail as it moved towards the sun. Now understand, NASA has taken all this data with over 60 instruments trained on Comet Ison, but not a single shred of that has made its way out to the public. And I get a kick out of this because I know those guys are out there, especially the Tier 1 guys, the military scientists, listen to my show regularly because they learn a lot. And they know that I know, through my theoretical work, I know about these properties. But none of these properties are listed as, this is kind of the pathetic side of the reporting about comets. All they show are these pictures of a white tail, and, oh, it's just water sublimating off of that icy nucleus. And they have the Tier 3 textbook repeaters out there. This is what's pawned off on the public. While the Tier 2 scientists most of them have figured out that I'm very right about what I do. So they're hunkered down, hoping they can get to retirement without anybody noticing that they have PhDs in quackery science. Yeah, they're just trying to scoot off to their retirement paycheck before anybody notices that they're quacks. And but the Tier 1 guys up there, the military science guys, they know I'm right. They're listening. And they have the data, the good data. And I'm sure they are seeing the iron, the heavy metals in the comet spectral results as Comet Ison neared the sun. And also, you could actually see the sodium tail as a separate tail in the Comet Ison as it worked its way in towards the sun, as I say, a few days prior to the closest approach to the sun. So these are some more details that you would see in the data if you were allowed to see the data. So Comet Ison, very much a characteristic, and as Comet Ison went in towards the sun, you could see the head shrinking. And if you go back and see one of the, so for example, the SOHO video is very, very good at showing this. Watch that comet COMA as it goes in. It's about 250,000 miles across when it first comes into view, and it shrinks down to almost nothing. If you look at my original papers, my papers explain that due to the combined electric field of the comet nucleus and the sun. And the nucleus of the comet is becoming more highly charged because the electric current coming out from the sun is much higher. But the combined electric field between the comet and the sun, the control area, the circle, what I call the circle of equal force, if you look in my papers, you'll see that term, the circle of equal force becomes smaller and smaller as the comet approaches the sun, and that means that the comet nucleus, or the comet COMA, that's the gaseous region around the nucleus, becomes smaller and smaller and more concentrated to the point where you can't even see it around the nucleus as it passes by the sun. And of course, the solar wind in that region is not allowing any tail to form in that region. And then when the comet nucleus pops out the other side, now it's getting away from the sun and it can start pulling in a tail again. I also talked about last week the fact that tail separation. This is what fools astronomers into believing they're right about the dirty snowball comet model. And even if a comet is far away from the sun, the ions are neutralized as they come in. They're drawn in towards the comet nucleus. They're neutralized because there's a sea of electrons around that nucleus. They're neutralized and they blow out in the solar wind. And so that fools astronomers who have instrumentation there, thinking that they're seeing what they call neutrals. That's the term that's used by astronomers or space scientists who examine the data from comets. They call these neutrals, and they think they're seeing the unionized material coming off a dirty snowball, when really it's just a small part of a very complex plasma interaction of the comet nucleus with the solar capacitor. So at any rate, I know there are people, my fans out there, the people who have studied my work who are understanding this. And but one of the most difficult parts of dealing with this is the fact that you have people with PhDs in astronomy who've got their brains wrapped around this dirty snowball comet model, and they can't let it go, and they just don't even want to look over here. They don't want to open that door. So one of the scapegoats on this, one of the things they use to block people from seeing my work, is they have the imitation electric universe people out there, the wannabe people with no scientific background who try and talk electric universe but have no scientific background, and they get it all mixed up and confused and backwards and upside down and turned inside out and make no sense at all because they're not scientists. So they get it. They think that you can just go out and talk electricity and things are charged, and if you say electric universe enough times, magically somehow that you've created a theory when they don't have any theory at all. So this is the distorted information that's getting to the public. I have a little, somewhat of an interesting story here, and I get this feedback from listeners. Listeners have tried to post on blogs where, there's a Comet Ison article, and you might have one of the staff writers or one of the two or three tier three NASA wannabes out there spewing about dirty snowball comets or whatever, and then my fans write in and try and put a note on the blog. Anything that mentions my name is blocked from being on the blogs. And I've gotten many examples of this over the past week. The Imitation Electric Universe people can have a whole video placed in a blog, forcing people to look at a very poorly created kind of, you know, a video that makes no sense at all, has no scientific basis, and is very distorted. And the other people in the blog are going, there isn't a theory here. You Electric Universe people don't know what you're talking about. And of course, they don't have any response because they're not scientists. But they refuse to put even one blog in that mentions my name. So you can see that this is a very well-programmed misinformation campaign to distract the public. But the other half of it is that I'm very successful. That's why this is going on. And the people that are up on top of science, the people that basically manage science, are forcing this misinformation campaign on the public, because I've identified the crux of the issue a long time ago. There's quite a few cruxes of the issue. One being the fact that the electrical nature of the solar system means that we can grab onto this electrical power. We can use it to run our society. We don't need coal. We don't need oil. We don't need nuclear power to run our society. We can run our society perfectly well off vast amounts of energy that are passing by the Earth every day in outer space. But you have to know how to do it. You have to know how to trap that energy, harness it, and bring it in. When I talk about my weather work, whereas hurricanes are driven by the electrical currents from the ionosphere, which are ultimately driven by the electric fields in our environment, in our Earth environment, because Earth is discharging the solar capacitor, which is ultimately the electrical power ultimately comes from the solar wind, just the same electrical conditions that exist around comets. The storm systems are powered, so we could be tapping into the electrical power systems that are coming down. So therefore, my work on weather is being blocked. And what do they give you? Just ridiculous meteorology. Meteorology based on theories that don't make any sense at all, that warm water creates hurricanes. The most ludicrous thing I ever saw in my life. I just saw in Physics Today, this past issue, came out, and they were talking about Earth's magnetic field. And they're talking about fluid flow, and it sounds all very scientific, but once again, tier two fairy tale science. The Earth's magnetic dynamo, there's a small fixed magnetic field in Earth, which was created during the comet stage. Now let's look at, this is very important, because let's look at Comet Ison. As it passed around the Sun, basically that hard, rocky, molten, metal-laden nucleus, which just got a really good layer of iron on it, as it passed through the Sun, that came out completely molten from the other side of the Sun. Now that's going to begin to solidify as Comet Ison moves out. But guess what? There's an electrical current passing in that region of the nucleus, which creates a localized magnetic field around the nucleus of Comet Ison. So as that metal, as that iron that just got layered on the nucleus of Comet Ison, as that cools down through the Curie temperature, it's going to create a localized magnetic field in the nucleus of Comet Ison as it grows and grows over time, as layers and layers build up. Someday it might be a moon, a small moon. It could be a large moon if it grows enough and works its way into the solar system, becomes an active member of the solar system. Who knows? It could eventually move into a planetary orbit. But it will have that permanent magnetic field locked into its core. Now look at how important this is. The planet Venus, when it came in as a giant comet, did not have that trip around the Sun. We know the path of Venus came in by Jupiter. It worked into very much almost a planetary orbit right away, and it never got close to the Sun. It's very clear. It came by Mars, interacted with Mars. It had two interactions with Earth as it worked in, and over a period of about 600 years, worked its way in due to the tail drag of the comet, worked its way into the position where we now see the planet Venus. So Venus never made it into the Sun, very close to the Sun, to pick up those layers of iron, which would give it a magnetic field. So Venus doesn't have a magnetic field. It would need a moon to create a magnetic field, an artificial magnetic field, a plasma magnetic field. And so when Venus is cooling now, chances are that Venus will not have a very significant magnetic field. Look at how Earth's magnetic field works. As our magnetic field buffers us from the solar wind, what happens? The protons from the solar wind come in, and protons and electrons from the solar wind come in at Earth. The protons go one way, the electrons go another way, so that builds up a second layer of plasma magnetic field over Earth. The Van Allen belts provide another layer, the ionospheric electrical currents, what we call the jet streams, create another layer of magnetic field. So Earth has many, it has in fact five layers of plasma magnetic field that surround Earth, and only a small permanent magnet, part of which is in the core, and another component which is up in the solidified iron in the mantle. And you can measure that with a compass. You can walk around the Earth and detect the local magnetic field. But on a day when we're getting solar storms, you can actually see your compass needle moving. If you just set a compass down on a table during a magnetic storm, you can see that compass moving. And that's because it's reacting to the plasma magnetic field that surrounds Earth. But Venus is not going to have that same type of internal magnetic field that can start building up plasma layers around it. But little comet Ison already is guaranteed to have a good magnetic field in its core. Now, I guarantee you, everybody listening to this show, including a lot of scientists, this is the only place on the planet you're going to find this kind of information. Maybe in the depths of the Tier 1 military science meetings, private meetings that are being held in regarding Comet Ison, they understand this, but I bet there's a lot of those guys out there listening and learning from my lectures that you are learning from on a daily basis, on a weekly basis. So at any rate, Comet Ison is very interesting, but when you listen to the reality of Comet Ison, and then you compare to the baloney, the phony baloney, ridiculous fairy tale science with no meat at all, no meat, no bones, and no content that's being pawned off on you by standard science on websites like CNN or spaceweather.com or universe.com or any of these other mouthpiece websites that toe the party line, you're going to realize that they don't know what's going on with Comet Ison. They can't tell you. They can't explain based on their comet model. They can't explain anything that's going on with that comet. And the best they can do now is they say, we don't predict comets anymore because they're too unusual. They do things that we can't predict, so we're not even going to talk about them anymore. And they just end up by saying, and this is literally true, in all the articles I've seen come out in the past days, they basically say, we can't predict comets, they're unpredictable objects, and therefore we're not going to predict anymore. But isn't that fascinating, because we have so much to learn? Excuse me, boys and girls, you are learning on this program how comets really work. Okay, so anyway, that's somewhat a review of Comet Ison and comets in general. But look at all of the internal science. You call this internals. The internal activity of the comet that happens, and that you can decipher and predict and surmise based on a true understanding of what a comet really is, that it's a plasma discharge of the solar capacitor, and that that pretty white tail out there is just the small visible part of the comet. There are dozens of aspects to this very complex plasma discharge that are invisible, that if you have the correct equipment, you can certainly look at the spectra and understand that you start to see iron lines in a comet when it approaches the sun. You see the head shrinking of as the comet approaches the sun. In fact, let's go back and look at Comet Lovejoy, which also passed near the sun. You see the exact same thing. The coma, the cloud around the comet nucleus shrinking as that comet approaches the sun, and then when the comet comes out the other side, it expands and grows again, just like clockwork. This is all explainable in terms of my plasma discharge comet model. Let's do a little bit of archaeology now. I believe it was last week I talked about Venus, or no, it was 2 weeks ago. I read the passage from Velikovsky's Worlds in Collision. I think it was page 201 from the original 1950s hardcover edition that I had, and he was talking about the orange comet Venus and the horns of the bull. So I'm not going to reiterate all of that, but if you missed that show a couple weeks ago, go back and listen to it. But let's talk about the archaeology involving Venus. A very interesting aspect of archaeology is that, for example, every major civilization that's handed down records to us talks about the concept of the winged serpent god of the night sky, or some people called it the phoenix, a yellow, fiery, basically a bird in the sky. Remember that this week I posted a picture of Comet Ison, which had those wings, those beautiful square-shaped wings of the phoenix. Perfect, perfect form of the phoenix. Astronomers that claim the Dirty Snowball Comet model can't explain it. How can they, when it first started to happen, they said, well, this is an explosion in the nucleus. How does an explosion come out perfectly symmetrical and last for days and days? Well, they don't have any idea. But a beautifully symmetrical set of wings. In fact, there were not two wings, but four wings. Two sets of perfectly symmetrical wings coming out of Comet Ison. These are the plasma, these are the electric field lines in which the plasma material falls into the comet nucleus as it's gaining matter, and a very intense comet. But the ancients talked about, and you'll see this in the pictures of the phoenix, it's yellow. They're referring to Venus. The comet was yellow. That was the spectral color. The energy level of Venus was yellow. And that's because, first of all, Venus was very large. The electrical current had to spread over a very much greater surface area of the comet. So whereas Comet Ison first turned green, then turned blue because of the intensity of the electrical current passing through it, and it was small, so that electrical current was passing through a smaller region of space, Comet Venus was much larger, so the spectrum was yellow. Remember a couple of weeks ago I talked about the comet spectrum, and it first started out in the red. And then it would get hotter, would turn orange, then yellow, then green, then blue, then purple, then violet. And we have seen violet, ultraviolet, in fact, comets. Comet Hyakutake, we've seen comets with X-rays, much higher energy. In fact, that's a property of all comets, to have that X-ray signature out to the sunward side. When the electron beam first comes in from the sunward side, it interacts with the gases and dust in the tail material, those Bremsstrahlung X-rays, breaking X-rays, where the protons come in from the solar wind, but the electron beam comes in, sees the negative charge on the nucleus, and they slow down, causing what are known as Bremsstrahlung, that's a German word meaning breaking, X-rays. All of these signatures around a comet nucleus, but the comet Venus was yellow, meaning that overall the electrical current, although it was certainly much greater than any current that was passing by comet Ison, although it was a larger overall current, it was spread over a much larger area, therefore the comet Venus was yellow, and actually overall lower energy color than comet Ison. So isn't that interesting that the smaller comets are blue, but take a big comet. Now the Hopis talk about blue comets being the dangerous ones, but remember that Venus was yellow. So take a comet whose nucleus is, let's say, the size of Jupiter, and attains a bluish color. You're talking not only about a big comet, but a comet with a tremendous electrical discharge passing through it. Remember also that right now the sun is at a very low energy state. And so the one thing that happened, and I had predicted solar flaring as comet Ison passed the sun, and we started after comet Ison passed the sun is when the flaring started, the CMEs coming off the sun, the coronal mass ejections that I predicted did start coming off the sun, and they were big booming CMEs, not the kind that the sun had been putting out previously. And I watched even the bad, the low resolution photos that came out of the SOHO cameras. You could see that once comet Ison reached up to a certain point, there was an extension that came directly down towards the sun, and as soon as that lined up with the sun, boom, that's when the big booming CMEs came off the sun. There's no question that comet Ison was interacting with the sun. But the other part of that is that as comet Ison rounded the sun, NASA shut off the SOHO feed for 12 hours. They were able to play, you might call it, playtime for NASA and the Photoshop boys over there at NASA, 12 hours before that data was released. And it's getting to the point where, and I'm glad the public out there is waking up at long last. And every show I give more and more information. The public is understanding that I'm right about this. And the boys at NASA are hunkering down more and more. But the hiding of data all through this encounter with Ison, the SOHO data was minimum 6 hours behind schedule. And during the passage when comet Ison was passing the sun, and afterwards, they were 12 hours behind. Someone is in there. See, understand that these are automated systems, and they should be going up there constantly like clockwork, automated. So for them to take the feed offline and hold the data for 12 hours, somebody, some individual or group of individuals had to be in there withholding that data and stopping the feed from going to the web page for us to see, giving them time to doctor the data, Photoshop it, remove obvious flaring conditions between the comet and the sun. This is the kind of criminal activity, and that's all you can call it, because people are protecting their money, their government money, by criminal activity to prevent their ineptitude from becoming public, because that's all you can say. These are people guarding the hen house with the data, preventing you, the public, from seeing it, and determining that they are quacks. How else can you put it? Liars, cheats, and government scientists, all in one big pool. But back to the comet Venus, and this is something I've explained many times, this is in my books, but and I talked about this last week about the tail drag, how that slowed down the orbit of Comet Ison. But I want to get more specific and talk about Venus becoming the planet. And how does this work? The tail drag, when the comet is drawing in the tail material, the comet nucleus, using electrical forces because it's electrically charged because of the electron current coming out from the sun, the nucleus of the comet acts like a rock in a stream, building up a pressure, an electrical pressure that charges up the nucleus to a negative potential, and that's why it remains negatively charged. That's extremely important. The wannabe electric universe clowns out there think that things just pop up in space and become electrically charged and can sit there and be charged forever. That's not true. In fact, in outer space, electrically charged items become discharged in a heartbeat. So you have to maintain that charge by a process. That's the plasma discharge process. So the nucleus remains charged, and if that current from the sun were broken for a second, the whole process would end. But the fact is that, like the bug in the bug zapper, the discharge occurs right exactly where the bug is. The same is true of the comet nucleus. So anyway, that negatively charged nucleus is drawing in the tail material. And once again, this process wouldn't continue because that tail material is working in its way into the comet nucleus as fast as it can. And if there weren't a process to keep a negatively charged nucleus, it would be neutralized in a matter of minutes. And so this process is a result of the nucleus interacting with the solar environment. This is all powered from the sun. It doesn't just become electrically charged by magic. So at any rate, the tail drag, as it draws in the tail material, that pulls also against the nucleus, slowing it down in its orbit. And I also explained this, that even though the comet nucleus is coming in, speeding up as it moves toward the sun, it's falling back behind its normal orbit. It still speeds up coming into the sun, but not as much as it would if it were not for the tail drag. So there are two effects of this in celestial mechanics. One is to reduce the eccentricity of the orbit. That means the orbit becomes circular. It becomes more and more circular with time. The inner part of the orbit moves out, the outer part of the orbit moves in, and the orbit becomes more and more circular with time. The other effect is called eccentricity damping, and that means that the comet moves into a circular orbit, and it moves into a circular orbit. So it's doing two things. It's having its orbit reduced, and it's becoming circular. And that is how a big comet like Venus is pulling in a tremendous amount of material can, in a period of maybe 600 years, nestle into the orbit where it sits today. Not before which it had two encounters with Earth. That's what we learned from the Mayans. We learned that from the Incas. We learned that from the Colburn, which was totally just joint. Remember that the Colburn says the same thing, that there were two encounters. And these books came from totally, completely different parts of the planet. So we know that Venus had two encounters with Earth. The Phoenix, the legend of the Phoenix, talks about the Phoenix, the winged bird basically a comet, interacts with other planets and can destroy other planets, not just Earth. So at any rate, that's how Venus the comet became Venus the planet. And this has been a mystery to scientists who think that comets are dirty snowballs. If you think comets are little harmless dirty snowballs, well, clearly a comet becoming a planet is a foreign concept. It's something that you could not possibly conceive of. If you're a textbook repeater, like the Tier 3 scientists out there that defend the NASA Holy Grail, then obviously this all sounds crazy to you. And of course, they got their PhD, and so they can't imagine that everything they learned and based their PhD on is incorrect. How could that possibly be? Their textbook repeaters, they got an A, that must mean they were correct, right? No, not correct. In fact, just about everything they learned is incorrect. They should have stayed in the room classifying stars. And really, this has been one of the problems with astronomy in trying to get my work recognized and understood in the astronomy world, is you're dealing with astronomers that have no scientific background. They should have remained classifying stars. Most of them stopped taking physics courses somewhere around sophomore year in college, and that's the most advanced they've ever gotten, and they probably forgot 98% of that. So how can you deal with astronomy when the people who are the supposed experts have no scientific background to deal with the complexities of a plasma discharge comet? It's just such a bizarre situation, and throughout history, and as people in 100 years look back on this era, all of this information, all of the articles that are being put out today, and all of the defense of the dirty snowball comet model and the people who are doing it, all of this will be public information. And I'm sure a lot of them in 5-10 years, when they finally are probably ousted from their positions, some of them before they are reach retirement, the public outrage should be immense, because we have had 50 years of bad science presented to the public. And the youth of this nation, they've squandered the space program on bad science, because the scientists went out there with preconceived notions that were wrong about how space works, about the conditions in outer space. And then once it became obvious that they don't know what they're doing, as now with Comet Ison, then they hunker down, hide data, and then push Tier 3 wannabes out there to defend the Holy Grail, while they hide data and prevent the public from really seeing what's going on. We're talking serious criminal behavior by people who have a financial incentive to maintain the status quo. Very, very strange situation. But at any rate, historically speaking, imagine the change to the textbooks, including the history of man, evolutionary biology, geology, planetary geology, plate tectonics. Just imagine all of the concepts that are being taught out there, which are partially or totally incorrect. People are getting degrees, universities are teaching science, which couldn't possibly be true. Like I said, originally the origin of man, in many cases the origin of religion. And this information is available. It's just that the people who are in the ivory towers are not going to let it through. Okay, but back to the comet Venus. The ancients talked about this, it was clear. Now, a few weeks ago, I talked about what a major comet would look like. It's not going to be this kind of nice, calm, white-tailed comet. The head of the comet is going to be lashing out electrical discharges to every small object, asteroid, or minor planet, or moon, or planet, is going to be lashing out with electrical discharges. Why? Because its electrical potential is very different. It's surrounded by an electrical shield, which is spherical, but that in many cases could be as much as 20, 30 million mile diameter. So anything within that 20 to 30 million mile sphere, electrical shielding sphere, this nucleus could be zapping out electrical discharges, connecting electrical with these objects. So that means dozens of these electrical discharges, like lightning bolts in outer space at any given time. And in most of those cases, you would not see the object out there that is being zapped, you would simply see the electrical discharges coming out the head of the comet. So this looks like a electrical lightning ball, you know, with maybe 10 or 15 tails that are all wielding around in different directions like snakes, also connecting with other objects. So basically, when they call them, for example, in the Colburn, when they call this a sky monster, that's literally what they look like. They're not going to look like the nice little comet Ison or the other little comets that we see today. So that's another assumption of astronomers that, and one of the things that they incorrectly stress is that comet nuclei are teeny, like a mile across or 2 miles across, something like this, when they have no concept, they have no measurement of the comet nucleus. One of the very interesting results of comet Ison, as it passed by the Sun, the European Space Agency and NASA and the release agencies of these space agencies said that they could not see in any of their instrumentation, they could not see the nucleus of comet Ison as it passed around the Sun. And the European Space Agency came out and said that comet Ison disappeared. It went away. It's dead. All gone. Goodbye. And later, it starts coming out the other side, much to the astronomers' surprise, because they couldn't see anything. So, and obviously, comet Ison had a very significant nucleus. So, with their best instrumentation, they couldn't see anything. They proclaimed it dead, and it came out the other side. This tells me that the instrumentation that they were looking at, possibly they don't understand it, or possibly, and I think this is the better possibility, that the Tier 1 scientists who actually control this instrumentation and see the data before it goes to the Tier 2 scientists, I think they clipped the data. In other words, I don't think that it was a fault of the satellite imagery. Certainly was not a fault of the astronomers who are watching this data, because they've seen things close to the Sun, including Comet Lovejoy. They could see the nucleus of Comet Lovejoy. So why would they not see the nucleus of Comet Ison and say it had disintegrated and disappeared? I think that the nucleus of Ison had grown, it had become relatively large, and the data was clipped before it ever got to the Tier 2 scientists, and certainly before it ever got to you and me. That's what my general conclusion is on that, that the Tier 1 scientists did not allow the size, and by the way, that's something that I talked about long ago, and I said we would be watching very closely the data to point out the size of the nucleus. Remember the comet Lovejoy, they said was a nucleus 600 feet across, and when it came around the other side of the Sun, the nucleus was without the coma. It was basically a naked, unsheathed nucleus. It was bigger than the planet Mercury. It was visible in the sky, and people could actually see the dot up there that was reflecting sunlight, and it was larger than the planet Mercury. So I don't think the mill boys, the Tier 1 scientists who control science for the basically the European bankers who want to keep you people about as stupid and out of touch as possible with science, there was too large a nucleus for them to allow second Tier 2 scientists to see. And so they basically photoshopped it out of the data before it ever got to the Tier 2 scientists. That is my analysis of the situation, because what came out the other side of the Sun was clearly a significant piece of material in one piece, a solid piece of material. And the fact that most astronomers wrote it off as disintegrating also is indicative of their belief that this was a dirty snowball and could not weather the punishment that it would receive that close to the sun. Now, just doing a little math here, just the sunlight, this is not including the solar wind, electrical currents, or other effects, just the sunlight would be 40,000 times or more what it is at Earth. Now, that's a high concentration of sunlight, and to expect that a little puffy snowball would somehow weather this for more than even a New York second is absolutely beyond absurd. So, at any rate, this is a good review of Comet Ison. We're going to see Comet Ison coming up in the sky. It'll be visible in the evening sky, hopefully a naked eye comet. And remember that my prediction for mid-January regarding weather and other conditions, and I do have to get a kick out of Standard Science, they're making a general prediction that somehow we're going to be hit by a debris field of Comet Ison. This is beyond absurd, and there's no reason for anybody to say that Earth would be hit by a debris field from Comet Ison, and why NASA is promoting this is beyond me, other than that they are trying to cover their behinds because I made the prediction about Earth being caught up in the sulfur dioxide field of the comet potentially in mid-January. But there is no reason to believe that Earth is going to be caught in any kind of debris field from this comet. So why the NASA outreach people are pumping this idea is beyond me, but obviously they're doing what they're told to do, saying what they're told to say. Okay, I'm going to spend the last minute of the show here talking about, once again, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. All of my radio shows are archived there, going back over 10 years. There's a lot of information, all the books, the DVDs, the CDs, the posters. It's time for the public to start educating themselves, because you're not going to get an education looking at basically Standard Science has hunkered down. They're basically saying they don't know what causes comets to do what they do. They're trying to maintain the dirty snowball comet model, but clearly it doesn't predict anything that we saw with Comet Ison. But go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. And once again, your purchases support this commercial-free radio show. Look at the book and CD, DVD packages that are there. And then, of course, the water filters, the calendar, the Recalendar Sunstar Clock, a unique product that you will only find on my webpage. It's been extremely popular recently. And I think as people receive their Recalendar Sunstar Clock, they show it to other people, and then other people order it. So it's something you definitely want to check out. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.